Welcome back to Harbour Unboxed. Tim is by my side, so you guys know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
I am feeling very drowsy. no, it's...
Does that mean I've drugged you or something? What's going on there?
Well, could have. I did have hay fever today, and I've had some medicine, and that does make me feel a bit drowsy, but I'm going to blame Tim, because that's why Tim's by my side, so I can blame him for all things that go wrong, things I'm not happy with. What are we doing? Oh, Q&A. Q&A part three.
Mm-hmm.
So... let's get into it before I blame Tim for anything else. But before we do, today's sponsor spot is brought to you by Thermal Grizzly and their new 12th gen CPU contact frame by DeBauer. It's well known that the integrated loading mechanism, or ILM, of the LJ1700 sockets bends 12th gen CPUs, leading to an uneven contact surface that reduces cooling performance. Solving this issue, the contact frame replaces the ILM, allowing for a much more even contact with the CPU's IHS and the base of your cooler, which in turn reduces operating temperatures. Installation's quick and easy, and thanks to the use of anodized aluminium, the contact frame is non-conductive. And then, for those of you who wish to further maximize contact, Thermal Grizzly now offers an optional lapping tool, so for more information, please check the link in the video description.
Alvin asks, you, like most reviewers, typically value a GPU based on its MSRP. This year has shown that MSRP is mostly meaningless, and, you know, we all remember 2020 and 2021. If a GPU is bad value at MSRP, the prices will come down pretty quickly, whereas a GPU that is good value will go up, like the 7800 XT that is basically a $550 US card right now. Why are MSRPs so far from reality, and how can reviewers and buyers deal with that as it can completely change the conclusion about a product?
Okay. Well, a couple of things. I don't think this is a new thing. Like, it's a suggested price, and we've seen... Mm-hmm. retail pricing deviate from the suggested pricing it happened well before cryptocurrency was even a thing. And then as for the reviews themselves, I don't think it's fair to say that we like heavily weigh any of our conclusions on the MSRP. Usually the MSRP we use as sort of a guide, and then we say what we think it should be priced or where we expect it to be priced.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we do compare that MSRP quite heavily with the retail pricing, so which may or may not be favorable for the new product in question. So you're right in the sense that we have to use the MSRP. Like, we can't make up a price, but we don't take it as gospel. Like, we work out where we think it should be priced, like I said, and what it likely will be priced.
And I think the gap between that reasonable price and what they're actually going to be selling it for is going to heavily influence the conclusion. If it needs to be like $200 cheaper, then that's probably not going to be a great conclusion. But if the price is only off by like 5 or 10%, that's much more likely to happen in the market.
The 7800 XT is a good example of that. Like, while it is disappointing that it's $50 more than when we reviewed it, it doesn't change, at least, you know, isolating that individual product. A $50 price hike for that product doesn't really change the conclusion of that review. Having said that, though, you are right in the sense that a product like the RTX 4070, that has come down quite a bit in price. So if we use our day one review data, for example, the 4070, that can be had for $550 now, which has gone down $50,
mm-hmm.
whereas the 7800 XT has gone up $50. So they're both at $550 now, whereas there's meant to be a $100 gap there.
Yep.
There's now no gap. And that means the cost per frame based on our day one review data is $5.40 for the GeForce GPU and $5.10 for the Radeon GPU. So it still means you're paying a 6% premium for the GeForce GPU. It is still more expensive because based on our day one review data, I mean, you know, ray tracing and stuff is going to be better on the GeForce GPU, but we use sort of a mixed workload there. But in the day one review, the GeForce GPU was almost 30% more expensive. It was fetching a 27% premium, and that's now down to 6%. So that does change the conclusion of that review. Like, at a 27% premium, I'm much more keen on the Radeon GPU. As in the premium for the GeForce GPU makes me want to save the money and go with the Radeon GPU, just to be clear. But at 6%, it's like, well, I think 6% is probably worth paying for the better ray tracing support, whether or not you want to use that. It's still a thing. DLSS, definitely a thing. And whatever other GeForce features you may want, like NVENC or whatever it may be. But a 6% premium is not a lot there. The only thing you're really missing out on, off the top of my head, would be the 4 GB of VRAM. But the VRAM discussion, really, I know we focused on it a lot, but it was to get rid of these $400 8GB cards. Like, we don't want those anymore. 12GB at $800 with a 4070 Ti, not great, but also is probably going to work for the foreseeable. And at $550, 12GB, less of an issue. While we'd like 16 there, 12 is acceptable. So,
yeah, and I think it's like the review kind of captures the situation at the time that you're reviewing it, which is, you know, I think it's not just GPUs that see price movement across various different things. You know, there's always going to be sale prices, especially around Black Friday. And that's true of a lot of different components, even CPUs these days. You know, a product like the 7800X3D is a lot cheaper now than when it was at launch. So that's happening all the time. And at least on our channel, we do revisit those products pretty often, especially for GPU pricing. There's obviously monthly updates on the channel. And then you would go and do, you know, big benchmarks for, you know, head-to-heads of various different relevant products pretty often. So, you know, it'd be bad if you're just producing a review and you're just letting that sit for a year or 2 years, because in 2 years, that's probably not going to be super relevant anymore. But if you're continually looking at it and assessing things and you're keeping things up to date, then there's always going to be that, you know, more recent information that people can look at and get the data that they need for the purchasing of the time. So yeah, I think that's just pretty normal. I mean, it's exacerbated a bit by AIB sort of controlling the price. You know, it's not NVIDIA selling you the GPU. They're selling it to an AIB that's then selling it to you. So there's like a, you know, there's a few different things going in the chain there. But generally speaking, I think we try and handle it as best as possible and keep you up to date on all the things that are going on as best as we can. And hopefully that'll mean that you can, yeah, have up-to-date information. And again, all the data is in the review. So you can go back, you can adjust the pricing as necessary the time and see how the products stack up later. It's all there for you, really.
Yeah, that's a really good point to raise. And I say this when people, you know, talk about, well, I'm in Europe and the pricing structure is different, or I'm here and it's different, or even in Australia. And it's like, well, we show our workings out. Let's say, like, you've got in one graph, you have the price of the GPU that it currently is, the cost per frame that results on based on the performance. So if you take two GPUs that are of similar price and trying to work out which one to buy, you simply take your price for each of those products. So if it's $500, take that price, then look at the average performance that we show. So if it's 108 frames per second, you take the price, you divide that by the frame rate, and that gives you the cost per frame. And the lower the number there, the better. So you can quickly compare all of those relevant products with the updated pricing in your region. So yeah, it's a little bit more work, but even the US pricing, we use that as a guide. But as Tim said, that can change at the drop of a hat. Like, discounts can apply weeks later, unofficial price cuts, official price cuts, sales. So really, all that information's there for you. Those numbers generally stay pretty consistent over the next 12 months, possibly longer. So yeah, you just have to do some of your own little math work there and you'll be able to work out which one's the best value for you.
Do you think that upscaling has been a net positive or negative for gaming? Bit of a spicy question. While I do think it's cool tech that can be deployed intelligently, I can't help but think that too many new releases have been reliant on it to run acceptably, and we are now in an era of AAA games with inferior image quality to what we had 5 years ago. I'm not sure I agree with inferior image quality. I'm not sure. I think people have memories of what games looked like 5 years ago that don't necessarily hold up if you actually went back and looked at games from 5 years ago. I think a lot of games that were, you know, I think of a game like The Witcher as a really good example. I played that game when it came out and I was like, whoa, this game looks incredible. And you sort of, you know, you don't play it for 5 years. You still think, oh, wasn't that game really impressive? You go back and you look at it and you're like, doesn't really hold up.
The same things with like CGI movies. It's things that you were fond of, like you really enjoyed it at the time. So it was a good experience. So you hold it right up there. And then, it's a classic old person thing, right? Like, they don't make cars like they used to, and old cars are awful compared to new cars. Like, holy moly, they're so unreliable. I mean, it's just everything. Like,
exactly.
When you had an older thing and it really worked well and you loved it, it's hard to sort of get that image out of your head of it being perfect and awesome. So that's what we're talking about here with game quality.
It's hard to be critical of sort of your favorite thing. Like, I love The Witcher 3, but like, yeah, the image quality doesn't hold up to modern games. And you know, a lot of those older tiles as well, you know, people talk about the image quality, like, oh, it might be a little softer because of DLSS. You go back and look at some of the anti-aliasing in those old games, it is horrible. Like, yeah, there's a lot of jaggies, and, you know, we barely hear of the term jaggy anymore. It's all about, like, flickering, stability. Like, those are the current artifacts. But back then, it was, like, just jagged edges everywhere, really. Mm. Especially, like, MSAA as a technique didn't handle transparencies very well. It just couldn't do it. So
disagreeing with that point, but I think there is a point to be made in, within this question, that we are seeing more reliance on upscaling technologies for games that don't always look quite as good as what they should or could have looked, and that's been evident through the optimizations and patches that have happened over time to get the games into it. We've seen it, like Starfield's gotten much better, The Last of Us Part 1 got much better. Like, a lot of these games were improved.
I think you could put games into like almost like two categories. There's like the poorly optimized games that don't run super well on modern hardware that require patches and at launch rely too heavily on upscaling, which is sort of what you were talking about, like your Starfields. And then there's games that, you know, they rely on upscaling because they are pushing the boundaries of graphics. I'm thinking of things like Cyberpunk, which you can play that on lower settings, but if you do want to get the latest, you know, the path tracing experience, for example, you really do need to be using DLSS and FSR to run that game. I think that those examples are more of a symptom of not too much advancement in GPUs. Like, if we had much better mid-range GPUs, then you wouldn't need to be running a Cyberpunk with as much upscaling as you do. And Cyberpunk is a game that I think is generally quite well optimized. You know, it does, on lower quality settings, run quite well. Same with Alan Wake. Like, yeah, you can push Alan Wake 2 use path tracing and you'll need a 4090 for that, but the lower quality settings still look very good and run quite well. But yeah, upscaling is required on a 4090 to use path tracing. So I think upscaling has probably, I'm leaning more towards net positive, just because there are a lot of scenarios where you can use just the quality mode and get a performance boost, and it doesn't impact the image quality too much. But then, obviously, there are Starfield examples where the game has FSR built in a bit too much. It wasn't come out in a great state. So
the net positive, net disadvantage is tough, right? Because, well, we're talking about the as a whole.
Yeah.
And I'm almost leaning towards it being negative.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I have recommended DLSS and recognized it as a key selling point of GeForce GPUs. DLSS is a very impressive technology. It works well. It's come a long way since its initial introduction. Very impressive. So I'm not trying to downplay DLSS for all you NVIDIA fans out there. We have highlighted it many, many, many times in our GPU-related content. So I just want to make that clear before I say all of this. I find it overall somewhat of a disappointing feature, because if you focus on that feature with like an RTX 4080, 4090, maybe even a 4070, very impressive, enables really cool things like you were talking about, the ability to use stuff like path tracing and things that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And in some respects with like esports type games, it's less useful because you're already CPU bound there. But it is an impressive feature that can unlock some pretty cool things on a high-end hardware. Now, the idea of upscaling is, wow, that's amazing. You can get X amount more performance, whether it be 40%, whatever. That is game-changing for the lower-end GPUs because it extends the life of them. It allows you to get better performance out of them. That was sort of what everyone talked about a lot initially. But the truth is, the lower the resolution, the worse it is. And at 1080p, it's pretty bad. I mean, some people will say, oh, I like to use at 1080p. It boosts performance. It looks okay. But damn, it looks pretty bad in my opinion.
I agree.
It's not good.
And it also, like, I haven't looked into this too much, but I think frame generation sort of gives you some idea as well about the lower frame rate you're running these features at, the bigger the differences between frames, and usually that creates more challenges for upscaling technologies because they rely so heavily on temporal information. The motion vectors, you know, the more change there is between frames, the more guessing they have to do with a temporal algorithm. So yeah, like, I think we've talked about this before, right? It's been sold as a feature to improve performance and it works really well on high-end GPUs, and that's where a lot of the testing and analysis is done. That doesn't always hold up for the lower end, when the assumption was it would help out lower-end GPUs probably more than it realistically has.
Yeah.
So I can sort of see it from one perspective, like there are going to be some GPUs where it does genuinely improve performance. I think at 1440p it is good enough to use, and there's a lot of GPUs where that's possible. You get a performance boost, and the image quality reduction isn't that bad. Like, it's certainly usable. But then if all developers are just going, yeah, let's just slap on the upscaling, and then your entry-level experience is 1080p, FSR quality or DLSS quality at a lowish frame rate, yeah, that's probably not the ideal solution. But then again, like, is that the fault of the upscaling or the fault that the low-end GPUs are still crap?
That's right. There's so many different ways to look at this. And we had this discussion last time when we did the theoretical GTX 4090 versus the RTX 4080. And would PC gaming be in a better position today? And I think we've already answered this question. If in stuff like cost per frame, if the improvements that we're typically used to seeing back in the day were still being made, and people say, oh, you know, because of process nodes and limitations in technology, we're not seeing those gains anymore. But if less of the GPU was dedicated to things like tensor cores and, you know, doing things like RT and all that, if that was used for rasterization and we would get, you know, big GPUs that were like even more impressive for rasterization performance, and then game developers could increase the level of detail in their games and stuff like that, texture quality with more VRAM, then would that result in better looking games than like the Alan Wake 2s that we have today? I believe overall more detailed games with higher quality textures look more impressive than, you know, what we're seeing from ray tracing, but that's a personal opinion. Our opinions will certainly differ on that one. But if that is the case and we didn't have to rely on upscaling, you know, we didn't have to see frame rates tank for some fancy lighting, you know, we didn't need frame generation because GPUs were way faster. It's like, would gaming be in a better position, PC gaming be better overall if this current generation was, you know, 30% faster or 40% faster?
Yeah, and I think that there's always like, well, you could get 30% faster and then add on the benefits of upscaling on top of that, so it'd be an even more of a benefit.
Well, you wouldn't be able to do it though, because
you
have the required. I mean, you could in the case of FSR for sure.
You could, yeah, but I think yeah, again, it depends so much on like the exact class of GPU, right? Because like for like mid range and higher GPUs, I think it's close enough that the in terms of image quality that you're not losing too much image quality from using a feature like DLSS. So yeah, you could have like a 40% faster GPU that gives you just 40% higher frame rate. But if one way of doing that is you get 40% faster frame rates through DLSS and it looks pretty much the same, it's not that much worse than the alternative of having a faster GPU. The faster GPU is going to be the better solution.
Where it gets complicated as well, the faster GPU, providing you're not CPU limited, is always going to be faster, whereas we see some weird scaling with upscaling.
Yeah, there is weird scaling with upscaling. And again, like,
so,
you know,
it's so complicated.
It doesn't scale the same across all resolutions and games. You know, there are games where upscaling is a lot better than others. So there are some games where you turn on DLSS and even at like 1440p or 4K, you can quite obviously notice the artifacts. And there are some games where the artifacts are pretty much impossible to tell, or even the better than native thing. I think in my, when I, back earlier this year, when I tested DLSS versus native rendering, there were quite a number of games where I felt that DLSS looked better than native, especially at 4K. So again, it's like, is that net negative or net positive? Because there are still like, I definitely understand the concerns over like faster GPUs would just be better. The over-reliance on, you know, the lack of optimization for games does concern me. That's not great. It's not good at lower resolutions, but then it has benefits for other scenarios. So it'd be interesting to hear in the comments where people land on the sort of net negative, net positive thing for upscaling. I don't think it's clear cut. I think personally, I would land more towards positive the negative, but yeah, I guess it just depends, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm not firmly one way or the other. I can make pretty good arguments for either direction. So the fact that neither of us are like head over heels for upscaling probably says more than anything about like the technology and
the direction
it's gone in.
I think it has improved quite a bit over the years, so there is potentially a future where, you know, the quality of upscaling is much better at 1080p and 1440p, or even the performance of GPUs makes 1080p gaming irrelevant. So you're sort of not really considering that as a resolution anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, how close are we to that? I don't know.
I think, again, the big problem here is the fact that, you know, we have seen stagnation in terms of, you know, cost per frame, price to performance ratios, where you have to talk so much about these features. Mm-hmm. They're not just a bonus of the product that makes it better. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like, they are key selling points of these mm-hmm. new generation products, which I think is the problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like if you're buying an RTX 3060 or RTX 4060, all the discussion is this GPU going to be able to play the games that I want? And if so, how much upscaling am I going to require? So then mm-hmm. you have to figure out, do I want DLSS? Is that super relevant? And then on top of that, is frame generation important at mm-hmm. that class of GPU? Because really that's the benefit of buying a 4060 over a 3060.
Yeah.
So yeah, if it was the case that a 4060 was 40% faster and giving you those benefits, then it'd be a very different discussion. Mm-hmm. It would be, it's a faster GPU, it's probably worth buying. And then, you know, you can use upscaling for further benefits. So yeah, I guess we're in that position because of a variety of factors, and GPU pricing is a big one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Currently in Belgium and probably other parts of the world, the price of components is such that a computer with a Ryzen 7600 and a GeForce RTX 4070 Ti is roughly the same price as the same computer, but with a 7800X3D and a 4070. So both around 1600 to 1700 euros, depending on the other components. In this situation, would you recommend the faster CPU or the faster GPU, and why?
Well, I think it depends.
It
depends. Because, well, when GPU limited, which you're going to be for the most mm-hmm. part, right, you'll get about, I think, 25% more performance from the Ti mm-hmm. over the standard model. So you're looking at about 25% better gaming performance there. But then if you're CPU limited, you're looking on average, the CPU is much more complex because the GPUs usually scale with the same architecture and everything, mm-hmm. pretty much the same. Like you're going to look at, if it's 25% on average, it's going to be like 20 to something, somewhere in there, like 27, 28%, maybe 22 to 28% variation between games. So 25% overall, whereas CPUs, I think it's about 30% on average faster, the 7800X3D over the 7600.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference can be anywhere from 10% to like 70%. So
yeah,
but that's, I guess that's explaining the differences in CPU and GPU performance between those various different combinations of hardware. Ultimately, it comes down, the it depends part comes down to the games you play.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're mostly playing, let's say, single player games that are very visually demanding, or certainly can be, like Hogwarts Legacy, even Starfield, which is CPU heavy, but mm-hmm. GPU is still really important there, especially at this class of GPU performance, then really you're going to want that extra 25% GPU performance, I would say. And neither of these options change future decisions like upgrade paths or anything like that. So it's really about the here and now. So I think for visually demanding single player games, you'd want the 4070 Ti because that's going to overall net you more performance. Mm-hmm. It's going to drive your dollar further.
But the 7600 is pretty fast for today's single-player games.
That's like right.
X3D is better, but you're still going to be generally getting a high frame rate experience at most reasonable resolutions.
Yeah, the 7600 is similar to like a 5800X3D, especially if you pair it with some good memory. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, DDR5 6000 CL30. And I guess that's where my CPU numbers are based on the same memory, and yep. it's quite good memory. So the gap between processing performance can widen if we're using cheaper, you know,
mm-hmm.
worse memory. Anyway, if you happen to be mostly playing esports games, so Apex Legends, Warzone, mm-hmm. I'm probably naming Battle Royales more here than esports games, but, you know, when you start getting down to like Dota 2 and, well,
CS2,
CS2, they become even less, yeah, Overwatch in particular, they become less GPU sensitive and much more much more CPU sensitive. Mm-hmm. And you're generally driving like more frames, and that's where the CPU becomes important. So if you're playing, again, Hogwarts Legacy, Starfield, all those games, 100 FPS is pretty good for those games. Most people are going to be very satisfied with that experience. And the 7600 will deliver 100 FPS in those games. You've just got to tune the quality settings for the GPU at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want 200 FPS plus, then that's where the X3D chip will start to make sense and be your priority. And again, you're going to be CPU limited in Fortnite and stuff using competitive settings, because a 4070 class GPU at 1440p is going to be churning out hundreds of frames per second. You're going to need the CPU to facilitate those frame rates. So, yeah, basically, in the simplest terms, single-player gaming where its graphical fidelity is the priority, I would be prioritizing GPU performance. And if it's esports stuff where you want hundreds of FPS and using lower quality visuals, CPU would be my priority there.
I recently upgraded from a 5800X3D to a 7800X3D. I'm well aware that moving from an Intel platform to AMD requires a full reinstall, which is a full reinstall of Windows, for the best performance. But I did note after moving from AM4 to AM5, my system wasn't running at the speeds I expected. So I did a full Windows reinstall and everything then ran perfectly. Why does the need to reinstall Windows when changing AMD platforms still seem to be an issue with AM5?
Well, I can't tell you exactly why, because it's probably varying reasons and it's probably not always the exact same reason. But generally just comes down to Windows and how it reconfigures itself. Sometimes the reconfiguration process isn't as optimal as a fresh install. When it does reconfigure, it does leave all the old drivers and stuff behind. So there's some skeletons there that can cause compatibility issues or slow down performance. Basically, driver bloat could be part of that. That could be part of the problem. Also, the Windows registry isn't as clean as it could be. It's a weird one, because we've seen situations where we've deliberately taken an Intel install and put it in an AMD system just to see how it performs. We've noted that performance is nowhere near where it should be, but it also depends on the game. We've seen some games that perform exactly the same as whether it was a fresh install, and then other games where the performance falls off a cliff. So it's not universally bad performance across the system. Maybe it comes down to different features that are used, like maybe resizable bar isn't, you know, functioning as efficiently as it should be. I'm just spitballing here. But it's weird the way that some games you'll fire up and you get the exact same FPS, and then other games are 20% slower. So a bit weird there. Not exactly sure what's going on, but yeah, always, if you're after absolute best performance, recommend a fresh install, because that usually gets rid of any performance-related problems, and even stability-related problems can be because you're carrying an older Windows update across. And even if you've had your Windows installed on the same system for multiple years and you've gone through, the big Windows updates, the small Windows updates, sometimes those things, especially if you had to roll back because something didn't work and then you do it again, often just downloading the most up-to-date version of Windows and installing that, that can solve a lot of problems as well. I've seen that fix things like USB dropout issues and stuff for both Intel and AMD. So the fresh install thing, while it's a pain in the butt having to do it, if it's just a gaming system, which usually means reinstalling Discord and just logging into that, which is very quick and easy to do, and a lot of software like that where it's sort of cloud-based, it's worth doing. If you want maximum performance, if you're happy with it mostly working fine, then yeah, but it's definitely a problem. I would say it's more of an AMD problem than an Intel problem, and I don't have hard scientific data to back up that claim, so don't run with it too heavily. But in all of our testing, we have seen AMD systems be more sensitive to dirty Windows installs, where Intel seems to generally work as you'd expect, and you can install Windows on an AMD system, move it over to Intel, and generally speaking, you do get pretty close to the performance you should using the Intel processor. But if you install it in Intel and go to AMD, pretty much always there'll be some game that sees a big drop off in performance that wouldn't otherwise. But again, when you do this, try and clean the operating system up as much as possible, remove all the old drivers, and then reinstall like it is a fresh install. So do your chipset driver install, all that stuff. And for the most part, you should be okay. But as I said, fresh installs are generally a good way to go. Should we wait for the upcoming RTX Super Series card by NVIDIA, or should we accept that the GPU market is going to be bad and settle with something that's already available as a poor value proposition? Well, you should definitely wait at this point, because we're pretty confident they're going to be released in about a month's time from now, so early January. And we don't, while we're not expecting anything major from them, they will likely put some downwards pricing pressure on existing GeForce GPUs in at those performance tiers, and probably do the same for Radeon GPUs as well. So, I mean, yeah, it's a month, so you might as well just wait at this point.
There's been a few very rare occasions where, like, pricing has sort of dropped in anticipation of new GPUs about a month out, and then they've corrected back up slightly when the new GPUs come out, in which case you would have been better off buying sort of a month before. But that's very rare. I think the majority of situations, you are better off with having all the information of the new GPUs. So when they're out, they're available, you've seen how they perform and their pricing. That typically causes most other GPUs to change in price slightly, and it's pretty rare for the products to go up in price. If anything, the existing stuff will stay the same. That's kind of the typical worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. So yeah, fully agree with you. Definitely wait, get all the information in front of you, then make a decision. You'll be much more informed, and you'll probably end up with a better overall, I don't know, buy at the end of the day.
Yeah, I would wait for sure. But yeah, as you say, it can be a little bit of a gamble, but yeah, I would wait. Will the 4070 Ti 12GB be irrelevant after the Super Series is released, or could price cuts make it a worthy investment? And what would it take for the 4080 to be a good product relative to the current market? Okay, so sort of two questions there. I won't spend too long on this because we've spent quite a bit of time talking about the Super Series in this Q&A series. But the 12GB 4070 Ti, was it $800 US? Mm-hmm. We've said that's a terrible price given that the VRAM and resulting performance, but largely the VRAM. I mean, that product really should be down. I mean, if we're expecting the Super version to come in at the same MSRP, it's got to be like a $700 product. And even then it's probably iffy. But then it can't go too close to $600. It's a bit messy. And that's NVIDIA's VRAM mess that they always seem to run into every generation these days. So. Yeah. The way for it to remain relevant is at the right price. And
I think it'll be discontinued. I think it's pretty likely.
It's too awkward.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to price it low enough to make sense. And then you get the 12 gig is the same as the 4070, so you have to then becomes just the performance different side of things. And yeah, so it's
too messy.
Yeah.
And then same thing with the 4080. We'll have to see how that – again, like, we've got to test the Super Series – see what the actual pricing is. There's so many unknowns here, so I don't want to speculate too heavily. But obviously, the individual products have to make sense within their own product stack, or it's just like no one's going to buy it. Mm-hmm. All right, Tim, quick one here for you. Do you think FSR upscaling will ever catch up to DLSS or XeSS?
It's a difficult one because I could certainly make a case for both yes and no in this sort of question. I think it is possible for FSR to improve to the level of DLSS, but they'd have to put in much more development resources than they're currently putting in. It seems like the FSR team went from developing the upscaling solution to developing frame generation. So they sort of largely didn't really do too many improvements on upscaling and focused more on the other side of things. And you know, FSR 3, especially with Avatar as a recent example, has improved quite a bit just in a short period of time. So they certainly have got developers that could improve it. It's just a matter of, are they going to allocate it to that specific problem, or do they see it as a good enough solution? Like, is it good enough to market? I would suggest that it's probably not good enough to be marketed as an alternative to DLSS at the moment. And I think that at some point there will be an FSR that is utilizing more modern techniques like AI upscaling. I imagine that's the most realistic path. Intel has shown that's the way to do it with XeSS. So I think it will improve, but then, you know, it hasn't improved all that much. It's been very slow to improve over the years, especially relative to DLSS. So I could certainly make a case for saying that, you know, the pace of DLSS is always going to outpace FSR. So it could go either way, but I certainly hold hopes that, especially with, again, examples like Avatar, that improvements can be made and probably will be made at some point.
Why on earth is the GTX 1630 so expensive? It typically sells for $265 in Australia, so that's $265 Australian, and it is a totally rubbish product. So why on earth is it so expensive? Not 100% sure on that one. Not sure I can give you a satisfactory answer there. I will agree with you, though. It is a totally rubbish product. In fact, I kind of forget it that it was released because it was released so late in the cycle, the GTX 1630. And the 1650 was a pretty rubbish product. The 1650 Super was a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I quickly had a bit of a dig, a bit of a look into the GTX 1630. And it is currently selling for around, $260 Australian, which if we refer to my day one review data, that means that the GTX 1630 is selling for $7.16 Australian per frame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whereas you can buy an RX 6600 for $320 Australian, and that works out to be $2.26 per frame. So that means you're paying almost That means you're paying more than three times more for the GTX 1630 when compared to the RX. And it gets worse because the Radeon GPU has 8 gigabytes of VRAM, which we now consider to be sort of the minimum, and the GTX 1630 has 4 gigabytes.
Well, good luck running games that require more than 4 gig of memory on a 1630. But I mean, that seems to me to be one of those classic, like, if you want the cheapest GeForce GPU.
Yeah, well, it's not even the cheapest GeForce GPU, but it's the cheapest of that sort of series, like the 16 series.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically just going, what garbage can we shovel to people that don't know better, that just will only buy GeForce, that want something that's lower than the other models? Yeah, and that's what they're giving you.
Yeah, I think the 1650 is like $20 more, and that's still crap.
Like, I guess they're just thinking that anyone doing any even slight amount of research is not the target market for that card.
And I'm sure we're showing the graph on screen right now because our editor Balin will have done that. But from our day one review, this is 1080p using typically medium quality settings. The 1630 averaged 37 FPS, whereas the 1660 averaged 141. That is insane.
Like, that GPU is meant for, like, your Dell OEM systems, right? Where they're like, they will put it on the box, hey, this has got GeForce RTX discrete graphics. And they're like, we're not telling you it's a 1630. And that's exactly what that card is.
Yeah, it's as close to a scam as you can get.
Yeah, basically, right? It's meant for people who do zero research. They're very familiar with, maybe not even that familiar, but they've heard of brands.
GeForce, like get a
heard
GeForce.
Of Nvidia, get GeForce. Get a product like that.
It ticks boxes.
It ticks a box. It's a discrete graphics. You know, maybe there's like a low profile version, which sometimes can inflate the price, but even then it's obviously not worth buying, even if it's low profile, because the performance is horrific. So yeah, I mean, that's what that card is designed for. And, you know, AMD's things like an RX 6400, and that's not as bad as that, but that's effectively what that card is on the AMD side. Mm. You just, the lowest product in the tier is always awful. It's always designed for like OEM systems, for people who don't do research. It's never good value for money. And yeah, just don't buy that. Please don't buy that GPU.
Yeah, the RX 6400, which is also awful, using PCIe 3.0, that averaged 51 FPS or 60 FPS with PCIe 4.0.
Mm-hmm.
So
fair bit faster.
Yeah, and it's still still less than half the performance of an RX 6600.
Mm-hmm. And from memory, it's not half the price.
Nope.
So, yeah. Anyway, that's low-tier GPUs for you.
Mm-hmm.
Avoid.
All right, we're going to hit pause there because Tim has buggered up. I'm blaming you again.
Oh, no. What have I done?
I don't know. I guess I'm over it. We've done enough, haven't we?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I'm blaming you for nothing. It's just, I give Tim too much money, is what we found out in this series. So I'm going to fire Tim, and then I'll be much more wealthy.
Okay.
So you can have Monitors Unboxed. Get out of here. Leave. Go.
Okay. It's probably not too bad.
There'll be so many people that are shocked and horrified that just don't get Australian humor or just that we're dummies. Anyway, that was fun. Oh, I guess Merry Christmas, right? Happy New Year.
Yes, yep.
We should probably do that, even though we're filming this earlier in the month because of scheduling issues and whatnot. And Tim already had a hard enough time getting here through the Christmas traffic. But,
hope you have a good holiday season. Yeah, it's been good.
Happy birthday if you happen to have a birthday around this time as well. Like, we'll get all the things
That's rare for us to say happy birthday to someone. So if your birthday is between Christmas and New Year,
sign up to Flight...
Are you pitching that to the birthday people, are you?
Yes.
Like, if your birthday is between Christmas and New Year, you're now obligated to sign up. And let us know if you do, if that has incentivized you.
That's what I was going to say, Sign up, hop into Discord, and then I can thank you in person and wish you a happy birthday.
Yeah, so do it.
Yeah, it's like a Fiverr thing now. Anyway, I've lost the plot.
Much of that hay fever medication.
Way
you're talking about.
Too much. I definitely overdosed on that. Thanks for watching, guys. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Tim.
See you next time.